Okay, so today's class is being dedicated to the memories of Ephraim ben Harav Yeshaya and Menashe ben Harav Yeshaya. Yogev, then the Neshama Shavan Aliyah, these are two brothers of our very good friend Yuri Yogev and the sons of a great rabbi himself, Rabbi Yeshaya Yogev, then the Neshama Shavan Aliyah.
This parasha is dedicated to the begodim, the priestly vestments. So we'll get to that afterwards. But also this week, this Shabbos is also Parsha Zohar. So Parsha Zohar, what's the mitzvah of Parsha Zohar? What is the Parsha Zohar? Parsha Zohar. What? Well, it's not two parshas. It's one parsha, Parsha Tetzaveh. But there's the special Maftir and Haftorah is Parsha Zohar, which means the parsha of remembering what happened with Amalek, the nation of Amalek, who attempted to destroy and decimate the Jewish people when they came out of Mitzrayim. And this parsha is always read, it's a small parsha, it's always read before Purim. That's how it's enacted. And the Shabbos before Purim, so it's tomorrow. Next week is Purim, of course, is Purim. And the passage which is chosen for this special reading of Parsha Zohar, to remember what Amalek did, is at the end of Parsha's Kisetze. The last Aliyah, Parsha's Kisetze, talks about what happened with Amalek and the mitzvah, the obligation to eradicate every last memory of Amalek and to eradicate him, not to forget what he did, and to eradicate any memory of Amalek. And aspects of Purim also have this in it as well. For example, when by the Megillah, when you say the word Haman, when Haman is said, everyone makes a big noise and a clap to boo Haman. And then there's also somehow the custom of actually putting the word Haman to write the word Haman underneath your shoe. So every time you walk on Purim, you get a mitzvah of eradicating, because Haman is descended from Amalek. So that's the passage which read Parshas Kisetze. However, there's another parasha as well, which tells the story of Amalek, the end of Parshas Beshalach a few weeks ago. But also that actually tells the stories that actually happened as they came out of Mitzrayim. So there are essentially two passages in the Torah which tell the story of Amalek. So the Shulchan Aruch says, first of all, the Shulchan Aruch says that this mitzvah of reading and hearing Parshas Zohar shouldn't be taken lightly. The Shulchan Aruch says that there are those opinions that say the Parsha Zohar and Parsha's Parah, which is about the Paraduma, the red heifer, which is read before Pesach, those two parshias are chayovim lekrosim b'deraisa. They have a biblical obligation to read them, to hear them, to read those portions. Lefikach, the Shulchan Aruch says, b'nei yeshuvim shein lehem minyan. If there's no minyan in a community, for example, let's say there's no regular minyan in that particular community where you're living, you have to go to a place where there's a minyan on the Shabbosim to make sure to hear these parashiyos with a minyan, because they are midoraisa. They are a bit of biblical obligation. So Zohar, that's so pertaining to us tomorrow, so Parsha Zohar, you'll be Mekayim, a mitzvah deraisa, fulfilling a biblical mitzvah of remembering what happened to Amalek. And that's what the Shulchan Aruch says. So the Mishnah Brura, Chavetz Chaim, he quotes the Trumas Hadesh, one of the Rishonim, and says that let's say you have a situation where you have a choice between going to a minyan for the Megillah or going to a minyan for Parsha Zohar, what should you do? If you have a trade-off between going to a minyan for Parsha Zohar or for the Megillah, now off the bat I would say for the Megillah. So he says, Shmir, listening to Parsha Zohar with 10 is better than hearing the Megillah with a tzibur with 10, because Mikrim Megillah ledas rova poskim, because many poskim, many authorities say that hearing the Megillah, it's enough to hear the Megillah, to read the Megillah by yourself in its proper time, and you fulfill the mitzvah. And therefore, if it's impossible to fulfill both mitzvahs of going to a minyan for Kriyas and Megillah, or going to a minyan for Parsha Zohar tomorrow, better to do Parsha Zohar with a minyan than Megillah with a minyan. That's what the Trumas Hadeshin says. The Magen Avraham disagrees, and he says that no, it's better to go to the Megillah with a minyan. Why? Because on Purim anyway, we read anyway for the Torah reading. There's an addition to the Kriyas and Megillah, we have a Torah reading as well. And for the Torah reading, we read the last passage of Parshat B'Shalach, which, as I said before, also speaks about the story of Amalek. Now, that's not the primary source of the performing the mitzvah. So the primary source of the way that we perform the mitzvah, ideally, tomorrow, is again from Parshas Kisetze. Kisetze in Devarim is where it tells the story again. That's how we do it tomorrow. That's the ideal way of doing it. But because it's also mentioned in B'Shalach, although that's not the chosen passage for the ideal performance of the mitzvah, so the Magen Avraham says, but you know, we read that portion anyway on Purim, not to fulfill the mitzvah of Zohar per se, but it's part of the reading of Purim. So once you, if you weren't able to hear it, to hear Parsha Zohar tomorrow, or you can only go to one minyan, better to go to the minyan where the Megillah is being read, and also catch this other passage about Amalek through Parshas B'Shalach, even though it's not ideal, because at least b'di'eved you can fulfill the mitzvah. B'di'eved, like what b'di'eved means, post facto, you can fulfill the mitzvah with Parshas B'Shalach, even though it's not ideal. That's what the Magen Avraham says. But the Chofetz Chaim says no. He says no. You can't. Better even though we do read Parshas B'Shalach, or the portion of B'Shalach about Amalek on Purim, it just doesn't come close to the value of reading the portion in Parshas Kisetze. Why? Because the portion in Parshas Kisetze, which speaks about Amalek, has other features in it. It talks about in Devarim. If you have a Chumash there, you can take a look. It's chapter 25 of Devarim, verse 17. So where it says, this is the true portion which we read tomorrow, and the Chofetz Chaim says, this is the ideal portion to read. You shouldn't try to get away with the other portion on Purim, like the Magen Avraham says, because the portion in Devarim, chapter 25, verse 17, the end of Parshas Kisetze, it says, Zocheh se'she'osu l'cha Amalek, remember what Amalek did to you, b'derech, on your journey when you left Mitzrayim, ashekorcha b'derech, that he happened upon you on the way, v'yizaneh b'cha kolenech shalem, and he cut off from you all of the weaklings, all the ones who were lagging and weak, who were at the end of the camp. You were tired and weary. For the Yorei Elokim, he wasn't afraid. Amalek wasn't afraid of doing this. When Hashem gives you peace from all of your enemies, from all around in the land of Israel, then Timcha Ezecha Malek, eradicate the memory of Amalek. So that's the passage which we do, and that's what the Chofetz Chaim says is better. Why? Because it contains these elements. It contains these elements of he happened upon you on the way, and he cut off from you those who were weak, those who were lagging. These ingredients are more important. More important than what? More important than the elements mentioned at the end of Parshat B'Shalach. So now go to Parshat B'Shalach. This is chapter 17, verse 8, where again the Magen Avraham says you can get away with this passage, b'di'eved, and the Chofetz Chaim says no, you shouldn't get away with it. So chapter 17, verse 8, tells the story in real time about Amalek, because again, Devarim is a recap of everything which happened beforehand. In B'Shalach, it's the actual real time presentation of the story. And it says that, and it starts in verse 8 and goes all the way till verse 16. And it tells the whole story of Amalek. Amalek came and he battled with the Jewish people in Rephidim. And it describes the battle with Yehoshua and how Moshe lifted his hands up. And as he lifted his hands up, they were victorious of Amalek. And then verse 14, it says, Hashem said to Moshe, write this down in a sefer, write this down in the Torah, write this down in the... In the Torah, in a book, in the Torah itself, write it down as a commemoration, as a remembrance. Zikaron b'sefer sim bosni Yeshua, put it well into the ears of Joshua, because he'll be the next leader. He'll be leading the Jewish people into Mitzrayim, into Eretz Yisrael. Ki macha emcha zeichem Amalek, because I want the memory of Amalek to be eradicated. So there's a lot over here, a lot of content over here. So the question is, why is the Chofetz Chaim so favorable towards the other portion? Why, what's wrong with this passage over here? Again, the Magen Avraham says you could get away with this. You could use this portion on Purim and b'di'eved b'yotze the mitzvah of remembering Amalek through this portion. The Chofetz says no, you shouldn't use this portion. You should not use this portion to fulfill the mitzvah. And therefore, if you have a choice between going to a minyan on Purim and going to a minyan on Parsha Zohar, better to go tomorrow to a minyan Parsha Zohar, because then tomorrow we'll be reading the other portion, the first portion I read, which is in Devarim, which has those other ingredients of the fact that he happened upon you on the way. So what about those ingredients are so special, so to speak? What makes that portion better? And also, just as an interesting point, there's more psukim in the passage in Bishalach than there are in Kisetze. Mm-hmm. So if you really want to suggest very, very naively or superficially which portion would be better to do the bigger one. Do the bigger one. But the Chofetz Chaim says, no, that's that. Even though it's a bigger, more, there's more verses over there, there's more detail to the story, that's not the preferable account. That's not the preferable narrative of the story of Amalek, which we choose for the mitzvah of Parsha Zohar. And the question is why, right? What makes this portion in Kisetze the better portion to use for the mitzvah of Parsha Zohar? So we'll answer that. But first, we want to do the portion. We want to go to Parsha Tetzava. So I want to bring out a point in the portion Tetzava, which will perhaps answer the question of what makes the passage tomorrow the optimum passage to fulfill the mitzvah of Parsha Zohar. So what is the portion again about? The portion is about the Big Day Kahuna, the vestments, the Godim of the Kohanim, and the Kohen Gadol. So when we delve into the nature of clothing in general, it's a very, very, because this is, if you want to find a portion in the Torah which teaches us about clothing, this is the portion. So because it's so much detail is given about the begadim, the clothing. So there's a really interesting Gemara in Maseches Shabbos 77b. And the Gemara tells a story of two Chachamim, Reb Zeira and Reb Yehuda. So the Gemara says that Reb Zeira encountered Reb Yehuda as he was sitting at the door of his father-in-law's house. And Reb Zeira saw that Reb Yehuda was in a light-hearted mood. He was in a good mood. Reb Yehuda was in a good mood. And if you were to ask him about anything in the world, Reb Yehuda would tell him. So Reb Zeira therefore began to question Reb Yehuda regarding several natural phenomena that he had observed. And the Gemara goes through all of these different questions that Reb Zeira asked Reb Yehuda. For instance, you know, why is a camel's tail so short? Why is the camel's tail so short? What's the reason why? And he gave answers for that. What's the reason that an ox has such a long tail? Reb Yehuda gave an answer for that as well. And he said, what's the reason that the horns of a locust are soft and flexible? Reb Yehuda gave an answer for that as well. These are very important questions to know the answers to. I mean, we all want to know, why are the antenna of a locust so soft and flexible? So it goes through a whole bunch of things. And among the things which he asks him about, and Reb Yehuda explains to him, is the definition of clothing. And the Gemara says, Reb Yehuda said that when it comes to clothing, there are several expressions we find for clothing in general. There are words in Hebrew which describe clothing. One word is levusha, a levush. Levush is a word for clothing. What does the word levush mean? So Reb Yehuda says, lo busha, right? Lo busha.
What? Lo lid bayesh.
No, yeah, right. Not to be, because by putting clothing on, you protect yourself from shame, because being naked is embarrassing, right? That's lo busha. Now the truth is that, you know, why is the body shameful? Body's the handiwork of Hashem, so it's a beautiful thing. It's an amazing thing. But the truth is that before the chet of Adam and Rishon, so they were naked. Adam and Chavah were naked. And the Pasuk says, lo hisboshesha, they weren't embarrassed. They didn't have any shame, because why? The reason is, the Mephoshim explained, the reason is because that the Madrega, the level of their body before the sin, was so elevated. There was no chasm, there was no separation between the spirituality of the body and the spirituality of the soul before the sin. And therefore the body, it says the Adam and Chava's body, they radiated like light. So the physical body itself had tremendous spiritual energy to it. And there was nothing shameful, so to speak, about the body. But it was because of the chet of Adam and Rishon, because they ate from the tree of knowledge, they lowered the body. and the body became much more of a physical hedonistic entity. And it was, you know, the source of desire, the source of physicality and hedonism. And in that respect, the separation between body and soul was so great, it made the body almost shameful in contrast to the spirituality of the soul. And therefore, that's why the Pasuk says, once they, when they were naked, they weren't embarrassed. Once they ate from the tree of knowledge, they had to cover up that nakedness, because to cover up the shame of the lowliness of the physical body, right? So therefore, a levush, word as a word for a garment, is lo busha. It covers up the busha, covers up the shame of the base physicality of the body. That's levusha. The next word, which Rav Yehuda explained, is the word glima. Also a word for, I don't know if that's used in modern Hebrew, glima is a word in the Gemara, and it also means a garment, but that's also from the word golem, an object which doesn't have any form, a person without any life form to him is a golem. The point is, as Rav Moshe Shapiro explains over here in his Sefer, he says that it's from a glima, the word glima is a levush elyon, a mechases eivarim. It covers over the body, right? It covers over, so you can't even see the limbs of the person. Obviously, clothing, you can't see the body. It's not to cover the nakedness per se, but it's to cover over the movements and the form, the outer appearance of the body. It's a malbush which is dedicated to, and this is the key idea, it's a garment which is it's a type of garment which is dedicated to elevating the dignity of the person. Because it's not covering the nakedness per se, but it's an outer layer of garments. You know, we have, just to put it into more practical terms, we have undergarments and then we have outer garments. The above garments over here, right, this is not, I mean, we got all these layers, at least I have many layers of me. I get very cold, right? But there's so many layers. What are these outer layers for? I mean, for warmth as well is obviously one aspect of clothing. But the other aspect of clothing is this glima aspect of clothing, which is not to cover the shame of the person, but it just conceals the more overt presence of the body and gives more dignity to the body. It gives more dignity to the person we put clothing on. Clothes maketh the man, the expression goes, right? The clothes give you a certain dignity. Clothes give dignity. Person has clothing, a person has dignity. Let me just turn this. Okay. So the clothing has bring dignity. This is the glima level of the clothing. And then the final level of the clothing is a sudra. And a sudra is a hat, is a type of hat, which is based upon, Rav Yehuda says, Sod Hashem L'Reyov. The counsel of Hashem is among those who fear him. God's counsel lies with those who have fear of him. And the sudra represents the idea of having reverence for Hashem, wearing a hat, wearing something noble on your head. And it's also related to the kippah as well. Kippah is also a yarmulke. Yarmulke is the contraction of the words Yarimalka, that a person has fear of the king, Yarimalka, fear of the king. But the concept of a sudra, of a hat, gives greater dignity, more dignity, but specifically, not just dignity as a human being, but in the context of this pasuk, Sod Hashem L'Reyov, the counsel of Hashem is for those who fear him. So the idea of a hat, and you see this, you know, this is what's encouraged. This is what, you know, you find this in the Torah community, so to speak, in the yeshiva world, especially with Rosh Hashivas and Rabbanim, wearing hats. Hats give a certain presence, give a certain identity to the person, more than simply dignity, but it also comes closer to this idea of Sod Hashem L'Reyov, those who have fear of Hashem, have the counsel of Hashem, they have the closeness to Hashem to them. So these are the different aspects of clothing. So if you look at the Big Day Kahuna, the Big Day Kahuna have all these aspects. Because first of all, let's just distinguish between the Big Day Kohen Hedya, the regular Kohen, and the Kohen Gadol. So the regular, or actually every Kohen, including the Kohen Gadol, has four basic garments. And the four basic garments are the Mechtesayim, the pants. And that corresponds to that most basic level of levush, covering over the nakedness, covering over the shame. So that's the lowest level of garment. And then you have After that, you have the kasones or ketones, the kasones, which is this, you know, long shirt, which is, it's not a big elaborate garment, but it's something which is another layer of clothing, which brings more dignity to the person. That would correspond to the glima level of the clothing. And then also the ephod, the chagura, which is a belt as well. So even though the Gemara doesn't speak about a belt, but belt, one aspect of a belt, one aspect of having some type of thing around the middle of the body is for tznius purposes. This is the origin of the gartel as well, to create a separation between the upper, more elevated part of the body and the lower, more hedonistic part of the body. That's one aspect of the belt, but also just by looking at the Kohen wearing the belt, it's very beautiful as well. It suddenly adds dignity to the Kohen as well, like the Kasonis does. And the last garment he wears is the hat, the Migbas, which he puts on his head, which would correspond to that Sudra mentioned in the Gemara, this high level that he's wearing a hat, which is a reflection of the Yiras Hashem, the reverence for Hashem that the Kohen has. So that's the Kohen Hedju, the regular Kohen. And then the Kohen Gadol has all these additional four vestments. He has the ephod, and they're all directed towards the special role that the Kohen Gadol has of doing the service, of wearing the choshen, which is a breastplate, which answers the questions to people who are asking questions. He has the tzitz, which is a piece of gold over his forehead, which has the name Kodesh LaHashem on it. So these four additional garments, they reflect higher levels for the Kohen Gadol. But the basic set of clothing of all Kohanim is really in line with those three levels of clothing, from the most basic level of clothing to the most elevated level of clothing. The three aspects of the clothing which covers the shame of the person, the clothing which enhances the dignity of a person, and the clothing which connects you, which really reflects your very high level of reverence for Hashem. Soda Shen Lireyov, which is the hat, the sudra, wearing a hat which represents fear of Hashem, the three levels. So they're the three levels of the clothing, that's in general. You know, a little bit more specifically, the Ramban, it's important to mention these commentaries because they're so famous on the Big Day Kahuna. The Ramban says, Nachmanides says, about the Big Day Kahuna in general, he says, the Pasuk says, L'kavadu l'sifares, about the Big Day Kahuna. They are for glory and for honor and for glory. That's what the verse says about them. They're for honor and for glory, suddenly reflecting these ideas just mentioned until now. But the Ramban says that they are for honor and glory, shiyiyah nichbad mefoah, that the Kohen should be honored and glorified, but malbushim nichbadim mefoarim, with these beautiful, honorable, dignified clothing, like it says in the Pasuk in Yeshaya, and then it says, ki eila habegadim levushe malchus hein. These garments are begadim of malchus, of royalty. They are royal garments. Kedemusan yilbashu hamalachim bezman haTorah. Like these garments, kings would wear these garments. And the Kohanim were like kings. They were like kings in the base of Mikdash. So they wore kingly, royal garments. That's the garments in general. The Sefer Chinuch, he marshals his famous line. The Sefer Chinuch has a famous line. Adam nifal kafi pu'ulotav. A person is affected by his actions. A person is nifal kafi lefi pu'ulosav. A person is affected by his actions. This is the origin of behavioral therapy. You do an action, it impacts upon the emotions, it depends upon the psyche. And he says the foundation of this mitzvah, of the Big Day Kahuna, is this principle, the person's affected by his actions. And he's affected by his actions. And this shliach, this agent of Hashem, the Kohen, serving in the base of Mikdash, who is atoning for the Jewish people, and the person who's bringing the karbonis to the base of Mikdash, Sarach lahat biskol machshavos, he needs to focus all of his thoughts and his kavanas upon the avoda. Obviously, the Kohen is doing a very, very important job. He has to focus all of his thoughts upon his avoda, which he's doing, and therefore he should wear these very special garments to help his focus. Because when he looks at the different parts of his body, he looks at the apron, he looks at the choshen, he looks at the me'il, he looks at the kasonis, he looks at the belt, can't really look at his hat when he puts his hat on. When he looks at all these different parts, different garments, immediately he remembers the mesorah b'libo, and he's awakened in his heart, it's awakened in his heart who he's serving before. So by looking at them, by looking at the garments, it awakens him, by seeing the glory, the specialness of these garments. This ties in to another idea, the Malbim writes, the Malbim, another famous commentator, he writes, and he said, basically, he says that the garments themselves have so much messaging inside of them. Each one of them has a particular message, an idea, which is to teach us about ourselves, teach us about Midos. Commentaries go to town talking about each one and the different details about all the different begadim and what they teach us. But he says in the same way that Midos, the Midos of a person, are a garment to our soul. So these garments in the base of the Kohanim, they teach us about different Midos. And in fact, one of the words for a garment is mad, mem dalet, which is the same thing as midah, because a midah is a measurement, and clothing have to be made for the person. So the relationship of the clothing to a person is the same as the midos to a person's soul, right? Because our midos, so this is also expressed by Rav Chaim Vitali, says there are three parts to the person. Everyone has different ways of looking at the person, but he looks at the person in three ways. We have a physical body, and then we have the spiritual elevated soul, and in between we have the midos of a person, our character traits. And he says in the same way that the body has to be healthy in order for the soul to function well, our midos have to be healthy as well. In other words, the midos are not necessarily part of the spirituality of the person. The midos are the character traits. You know, being good, being kind, being truthful, they are avenues to the deeper spirituality of the person, but they are not intrinsically spirituality. So spirituality is the connecting the soul through mitzvahs and through spiritual, and through learning and through davening. But the midos, the character traits of honesty and integrity and truthfulness and justice and peace, etc., these are midos. These are character traits which are essential for the development of the soul. But they are midot. They are midos. They are outer shells. They are like garments. They're garments for the soul. And therefore, the garments of the Kohen Gadol, the Kohanim, they are all a metaphor for the midos of a person. They're a metaphor for the midos of a person. And if they're a metaphor, the midos of a person, therefore, by reflecting on the nature of these garments, then you learn about different midos, and then you improve yourself. That's how the Malbim takes it. But we have over here a picture of the different dimensions of the garments. But let's go back to the first explanation. The first explanation is we've got three levels of clothing. We've got the clothing which covers the nakedness, which lo busha, levush, no embarrassment. The second level is dignity, is covered. And the third level is that which brings out the true reverence of a person, the spirituality of a person, the elevated nature of a person through the sudra, the hat of a person. They're the three levels. That's what we're learning over here. Right? That's what we're learning about clothing. Right? So when we get dressed, we are putting our clothing on. We should think about these three dimensions that the clothing is helping us to connect to, that we are covering our nakedness. We shouldn't walk around naked, right? Lo busha, levush. We should have dignity. We should dress with dignity. We should have a glima, dressed with dignity. And we should also dress in a way which reflects our elevated level of being yureim, being yorei shemayim, being fear, having fear and reverence for Hashem. That's the third level. So now I said I wanted to find an answer to the question as to why the portion in Kisetze is a better portion to read for Amalek tomorrow for Parsha Zohar. So we'll see an answer now. If you take a look, let's go back to the passage in Kisetze, which we read tomorrow. And again, that's in Devarim, chapter 25, verse 17. So what is the passage? And again, the Chofetz Chaim said this. He says, in that passage, there is the ingredients which are not in the other passage in Beshalach. One of those ingredients is the verse which is Ashekarcha Bederach, that Amalek happened upon you on the way. Happened upon you on the way. So it's a funny word to say in English. In Hebrew, Ashekarcha Bederach, he happened upon you. I'm just translating how it's in the Ot scroll. But Rashi gives an explanation of that phrase, Ashekarcha Bederach. And he gives us three definitions of the word kar, kuf resh. Rashi says, what is this word karacha? The first definition of the word karacha is mikra, happenstance. Happenstance, accident. Mikra, meaning to say that it is the concept of there's no rhyme or reason for anything. Essentially, there's no God. God doesn't exist. There's no hashkacha. Everything is by chance. You know, evolution. There's no reason for everything. Everything is just, there's no providence. Hashem is not running the world. Derech Mikra is the word which we use when we are talking about people who are completely oblivious to the fact that there's a hashgacha process that Hashem is running the world. In Parshas Bechukosai, if you go with me, Bekeri, just saying like Hashem's not here, Hashem is not in control, and everything is random. There's no reason for everything. There's no sense to anything in the world. That's Mikra. There's no God. There's no power behind everything. Derech Mikra. This was the philosophy of Amalek. That's what the Pasuk says. Think about this for a second. The Jewish people have just come out of Mitzrayim. They've come out of Mitzrayim, where they've experienced this profound impact of God's presence in the world. All the miracles and the awareness, the revelation by Yetzias Mitzrayim itself. There was a revelation of Hashem's presence by the Yetzias Mitzrayim itself. They were so suffused and so overwhelmed with the presence of Hashem when they left Mitzrayim. In life, whenever there's good, there always has to be the opposite of good in order to create the balance of good and evil in the world. That's a reality. Wherever there's a side of good, there's always going to be a counterbalance on the side of evil. The Jewish people have experienced this this profound message of God's presence. It's almost perforce there has to now be some kind of antagonist to that force, which is now going to face the Jewish people when they come out of Mitzrayim. And that's Amalek. Amalek is the antithesis of everything that they experience in leaving Mitzrayim. They experience Hashgacha, Hashem's presence in the world in the most intimate fashion. The Ramban says, for example, the fundamentals of Amunah and faith is learned from Yetzias Mitzrayim. That's why so many mitzvahs are related to Yetzias Mitzrayim, because it teaches us so much about Amunah and Bitachon. And that's what the Jewish people experience leaving Mitzrayim. Comes along Amalek, the Mamish, the antithesis, the 180 degree turnaround of that. It's all Mikra. It's all Mikra. God's running the show. You're serving Hashem. There's reward and punishment. There's a purpose to everything. That's all silly. It's all Mikra. The world just came to be by accident. Everything is just an accident. There's no God in the world. There's no Ashgacha Pratis. It doesn't make a difference what you do. It's all Mikra. It's all Mikra. It's all Mikra. That's one definition, Asher Karcha B'derech. That's the first definition Rashi gives. The second definition of Asher Karcha is Lashon Keri V'tuma. The word Keri is used in the Gemara, which just very literally translated as, it actually means seminal emission. But it's a word which represents impurity. It represents impurity and immorality. Keri V'tuma. She'metama b'mishkav zocha. They engaged in very, very inappropriate types of relationships. That was Amalek. Amalek was a nation which engaged in the worst, most hedonistic behaviors and relationships. And therefore, the second definition now is this, that Amalek, Asher Karcha B'derech, tried to infuse into you impurity. Carry impurity and immorality. That's their second mission, their second focus on the Jewish people. First one is, there's no God, there's no purpose, it's all just by accident. Second now is immorality, the depths of immorality, carry. And the third definition Rashi gives is Lashon Kor, which is Kuf Reish also, Kor, which is Kor V'chom, cold and hot. Kor is cold, cold. Because Rashi says, Tzinenecha v'hifshircha, he called you off from your heat, from your fire inside of you. The Jewish people came out with fire and enthusiasm, knowing that Hashem was with them. Tremendous fire and energy. And Zrizus they came out with, and they came along and battled with them to cool off that energy. Because all other nations were afraid to fight, to wage a war with you. And this one, Amalek, came, the Hischel. He began the process of waging war against the Jewish people. The Herem Mokalachem then gave an opportunity for other nations to fight against them as well. Moshal Ambati Resachas, it's a metaphor of a very hot bath, a very hot pool of water. Shein Kol Beri Yechol Leir Besocha, that no one can go inside this hot bath. It's too hot for anyone to go inside of. Bob ben Beliyael Echad, some disgusting menace of a person comes along, jumps in, and he goes inside of it, and he gets burned, even though he gets burned, but he calls it off for everyone else, and he opens the door for everyone else to come and follow afterwards. That was a Molech. A Molech is cold. He starts off with this battle, this brazen battle against the Jewish people to go ahead and to destroy them by being so audacious to fight against this lofty nation. They were full of fire and enthusiasm and self-worth, and Amalek comes along and tries to destroy that by cooling them off from their stature, cooling them off from their chashivas, from their importance. Amalek also is described as a late is a scoffer. Scoffer, it's a similar idea. This scoffing, this reduction from an elevated status to a lowly place, this is what Amalek is doing. So if you think about this, you take these three definitions, right? The first definition of Amalek, the first theme of Amalek is denial of God. Denial of God, essentially. A lack of denial of God. The second definition is abject immorality. Is the second definition. And the third is a complete reduction, is a destruction of the stature of the Jewish people, removing and bringing the Jewish people down and allowing everyone else to now attack the Jewish people. That's making the Jewish people into a nothing. That third definition is a lack of chashivas, and they're called, and the Amalek is called a late, a scoffer, someone who makes fun and reduces people down and says, you're not worth anything, nothing. You're not chashiv, not important. You think about those three definitions, they map perfectly to the three aspects of the clothing. Because clothing, right, again, what are the three features of clothing? Clothing teaches us morality. The lowest level of the clothing is the levush, covers over our immorality. The second level of clothing brings us dignity. And the third level of clothing brings us reverence of Hashem, the presence of Hashem. And Amalek was the antithesis of all of this. The exact antithesis. He was a person steeped in immorality, steeped in the lack of levush, steeped in immorality. It was a nation which was completely devoid of any chashiv, not recognizing the chashivas, the importance of Klal Yisrael, the elevated status of Klal Yisrael, to go ahead and bring them down and to make fun of them, to scoff at the Jewish people, lack of chashivas, lack of dignity, lack of value. And the third aspect is the first mikra. There is no God. There is no power. There is no force above. There is no Sod Hashem L'Reyov, that the counsel of Hashem is to those who fear Him, who have reverence for Him. Rubbish, there's no God. Everything is just happenstance. There is no Almighty in the world which is running the world. That's the antithesis of the clothing, and that's Amalek. So therefore, it stands to reason why this is the passage which we should read tomorrow, because this captures all of the three facets of Amalek and the absolute danger and destruction that these philosophies bring to the Jewish people. And as we go into Purim, Purim is considered like a second Kabbalah of Torah. It says, the Gemara says that the Jewish people reaccepted the Torah on Purim. Also, we say the Purim, you know, the famous one is Yom Kippurim, that there's in the words Yom Kippurim are the words Yom Kippurim, a day like Purim. And in this way, there's such an elevated level of Purim that it's even higher than Yom Kippur. The spiritual potential of Purim is even higher than Yom Kippur. If this is what Purim is, then it's so important to get ready for Purim by eliminating all of these false ideologies, these false forces, these false beliefs. And if you think about it further, they actually map to the three cardinal sins. Because what's the three cardinal sins? Belief in Hashem. So what's the antithesis of that? Everything is b'mikra. Everything is happenstance. There is no God, right? Murder. Right? Murder is a lack of chashivas, a lack of importance. Life has no value. People don't have any value. That's also a Amalek. And the third level, the third is immorality. Immorality, carry, the word carry. They were the embodiment of immorality. So they had within themselves all of the three cardinal sins. So if we're going to really, you know, make sure we are proper yidden, and really connected and living a life of truth as being Jewish, we have to get rid of a Molech, we have to get rid of the three cardinal sins, and we have to get dressed properly.